Did you ever watch the Powerpuff Girls? It was a popular cartoon in the 1990s. If you did, you might recall the mayor of Townsville. He's a short, round guy with pointy little feet, a handlebar mustache, a top hat, and, of course, a monocle. He relies very heavily on the Powerpuff Girls to save the day.
Mayor?
I can't get my pickle jar off that high, high shelf.
Mayor, the hotline is for emergencies only.
This is just a silly cartoon, but if it's unclear what the mayor of Townsville does, that may be more relatable than a lot of us want to admit. With Undecided currently in the lead in Kansas City's mayoral race and an election next month, we're going to try to clear up what it is a mayor does. And not just that, what it is a mayor does in Kansas City, Missouri specifically, because we're a little bit unusual here. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is Mayors 101 on KCUR's Central Standard. Call 816-235-2888 with your questions. And remember, the only dumb question is the one you didn't ask. 816-235-2888. We're going to start with a couple of reporters who have spent a lot of time covering City Hall. Lynn Horsley, formerly of The Star, and our own Lisa Rodriguez. Good morning, you two.
Good morning.
Very good to be here.
So, Lisa, you started covering City Hall within the last few years. I'm curious, what are some things that surprised you about the role of the mayor as compared with other city officials when you first got to know your way around?
Well, I suppose when I started, I expected to see the mayor all the time, just rushing about City Hall and all these committee meetings. But really, he's not involved in a lot of the day-to-day back and forth of legislation. And you just, you know, I would see him just once a week if I got to go to the legislative session on Thursday, where he casts his one vote. And so it was a little surprising that I didn't see him behind the scenes of all of the legislation that was being crafted in the city.
Any other surprises?
I don't know. Just that it wasn't, it's not this like all powerful role that we might imagine as mayor, because as much as the public sees the mayor out and about on this in the city and out at different events, it was not the same at City Hall. And it really, he's just another vote on the city council. And that was a little surprising to me.
Lynn Horsley, you've been covering local politics for 30 years. And we'll dig deeper into some of that experience shortly. But Kansas City, as Lisa has just alluded to, has a quote unquote weak mayor. It's also been called a bully pulpit. Can you explain that?
Well, the mayor is the political face of the city. He's the one who is elected. And
sometimes she.
And she,
right now,
definitely,
he.
Good point, is kind of the ambassador for the city and represents the city at national events. But the day-to-day management of the city is really from the city manager. And the manager hires and fires the department directors and directs the staff. If your potholes are pocking the city, or the trash doesn't get picked up, or your water mains are constantly breaking, that is something that falls to the city manager to deal with. The mayor rules primarily from the bully pulpit.
What does that term mean? Well, it sounds so cruel.
Well, he is the one that tries to corral the other 12 council members, but he is just one vote. And so he has to cajole and persuade them to go along with his agenda.
And sometimes uses that visibility to do it. Is that the bully part?
Well, and it depends on the mayor's style. I think some people might say that Sly James has at times tried to bully his way to his agenda. Other mayors are more probably diplomatic. I think people would say that Kay Barnes was not a bully generally, but she also had a more compliant council. And frankly, when Sly James was first elected, he had a council that was very supportive of him. Mark Funkhauser fought tooth and nail with his city council almost the entire 4 years he was in office, and that's probably why he only lasted one term.
Well, that was its own special
circus.
Was a special time in Kansas City, and I want to get back to that, but just sticking for now with this like basic understanding of what the mayor does, and so far we've mostly explored what the mayor doesn't do. I have found it fascinating that our police department is not answerable to the mayor. I think that that typically in most cities, that's not the case. But the police department here is under state control, not city control. So the chief of police actually reports to the governor of Missouri and not the mayor of Kansas City.
Well, this all goes back about 80 years, and it has to do with why Kansas City has a weaker form of mayor and also why we have a state-controlled police department. Back in the 20s and the early 30s, this was really called Tom's Town, Tom Pendergast. And Tom was not an elected official. He was a corrupt businessman, but he controlled the police department. He controlled the council. He controlled the city manager. He controlled the judges. He got all sorts of contracts for his business. He put tons of employees in the city.
He manipulated the whole city and operated basically outside the rule of law.
Exactly. And he had all kinds of gambling and bootlegging operations. And the police looked the other way. And finally, the citizens had had enough. And Pendergast was indicted and went to prison in 1939. And at that point, there was a group of reform citizens, and in many cases, women's groups. They had finally gotten the ability to vote and to be involved in politics. And so there was a clean sweep, and a new mayor and a professional city manager were brought in, L.P. Cookingham. And he got rid of all the patronage employees and established professional ways of running the government. But also the decision was made that the police department should not be part of city government because then it could be vulnerable to being manipulated by a corrupt official or business person.
Just that no one person should have that kind of say.
And people have long memories in this town. I mean, this was in the 1920s and 30s. That's 80, 90 years ago.
We talk about Pendergast a lot.
We do. He cast a long shadow, and we are still living that legacy. But I think Kansas Cityans really generally prefer having power kind of diffused. The mayor is the political leader. You know, if you're going to build a new airport, he's the one that has to rally voter support for that. If you're going to do a streetcar, if you're going to build a convention hotel, if you're going to tackle huge projects, the mayor still has to rally the council and get voter support. But people want their basic city services run like a business, and that's what the city manager does. And there's a big debate about the police department. You know, the city does fund the police department. They provide the budget for the police department. And so many people think the police department still should be part of city government. In Kansas City is the only city that has a police department run with a state board. The mayor is one voice on that state board.
And there was some effort to change that recently.
There was in the first term of Sly James appointed a task force. They debated it forever and then didn't end up pushing for local control. I think there still is a strong push for local control, and that may be an issue that will come up with the new mayor and council.
How long is a mayoral term?
A mayor serves for a four-year term. They can serve two consecutive four-year terms, and in most cases recently, people have generally liked their mayor. They've elected them for two terms. Obviously, Mark Funkhauser was an outlier, and he only served one term.
Yeah, I was just about to say, tell me about some of the memorable mayors of Kansas City's past, and perhaps since he's come up twice already, Funkhauser is where we shall begin.
You know, Mark Funkhauser had been the city auditor for years. He was a watchdog. He knew where all the skeletons were in city government. He knew where the problems were. And people,
very tall.
He
a
was
very
tall.
Man.
He was well-spoken. He knew city government intimately, and people thought he would be a terrific mayor. What he didn't tell people was that once he got elected, he was going to put his wife in as a co-mayor. And she really did not have a political bone in her body. She alienated a lot of people. They were sued over racial difficulties in their office. Mark kind of had a my way or the highway approach about him. He did not rally the city council. And it was just really 4 years of chaos. And there again, I think a lot of people, many big cities have strong mayor forms of government where the mayor runs the city. But if you have a mayor like Mark Funkhauser, who turns out not to be very effective, people look at that and say, well, if a strong mayor form of government is great if we have good mayors. If we have a bad mayor, it's terrible. And so, again, I think people are reluctant to consider the idea of a strong mayor form of government.
Other mayors who are either in people's recent memories or just have a long-lasting legacy in Kansas City who or an had a unique approach to the job who you'd like to draw our attention to?
Well, you know, going back to Dick Berkley, he was a Republican. And first of all, people need to know that
and
the
this
mayor...
And this is what, the late 70s?
1979 to 1991. The mayor is not a partisan position in Kansas City. It's generally nonpartisan, and the city's mostly pretty Democratic. But he was a Republican. He presided when the Hyatt collapsed, when Kemper Arena collapsed. And he really, he had a small staff. He was very low-key. Then that was followed by Emanuel Cleaver, our first black mayor. And Emanuel Cleaver beefed up the staff. I think he tried to create a strong mayor form of government. It just didn't get pushed through.
He I was a kid when he was mayor, but my memory of Emanuel Cleaver as mayor was that he was kind of an orator mayor.
He was a very strong speaker. I mean, he was a preacher by profession, so he was a strong speaker. He knew how to count votes on the council. He said, as long as I have my, you know, 7 votes on the council and I can push through my initiatives, he pushed through, you know, the Brush Creek redevelopment, the American Royal. You know, he had a forceful way about him and really beefed up the power of the mayor, although it still wasn't a strong mayor. Then we had Kay Barnes, our first woman mayor. She had her own style. It was pretty low-key and focused on basic services her first term. But Kay will always be best known for really pushing for the revitalization of downtown. It was a slow process. It took a long time. But we're now seeing the fruits of that in our very vibrant downtown.
And when people talk about TIF now, they're talking about something that goes back to the Barnes administration, right?
Exactly. Kay Barnes had a lot of connections with development lawyers. They did hand out tax increment financing or tax breaks to try to lure in developers. And many people look at the Power and Light District. That got a huge TIF. Which allows the taxes from a development to go back into paying off the debt. Unfortunately, the projections for how many taxes would be generated did not materialize, and so they backed that debt with city government funds, taxpayer dollars, and we're continuing to pay that debt off to a great degree even now.
You know, so as Lisa, you're someone who's new to covering mayors, new-ish, and I'm interested in, you know, how the history that you're hearing now, how that's simmering in your mind as you think about the mayor's race that's currently going on.
Well, what I've heard, I mean, from this brief history, which I was just like gazing in amazement here to have all of that knowledge there, is that really it depends. It centers so much around the personality of who is mayor and what that person decides to do with the job, because there is, you know, the powers of the mayor are limited, but the style is really, I mean, that's the substance of what this job is and what direction you decide to take.
Can I pause you there? The style is the substance. Can you explain what you mean by that? Because that is definitely my impression. And I think just putting sort of highlighting the fact that when we say that the style is what's important, that doesn't mean it's a frivolous role.
Not at all. Not at all. Because, you know, while the mayor is just a single vote on any number of issues, it is the person that has to rally support. And if you want to set directions and prioritize certain initiatives, then you have to be able to not only rally the support of your city council, which is, you know, elected independently. You don't run with a running mate or a certain council. And then you also have to rally the public support behind issues that go before, you know, citywide issues. So it really, the style of mayor is hugely important in how a city is run and how successful a mayor can be.
Lisa makes a terrific point. And we have had mayors with very distinct personalities. Going back to Cleaver, Barnes, Sly James, and Mark Funkhauser, they were all very individual people with their own styles. And we have a slate of 11 candidates running this time around. Again, very distinctive personalities. The problem is, right now, voters don't know those folks very well. So it's a very hard choice.
You know, so Lynn talked about a couple of things, like as far as the mayor's role, such as the difference between what the mayor does and what the city manager does. Is there anything else that we should, because I guess I'm thinking about this current race as these are job interviews, but does everyone have a full grasp of the job description that they're looking to fill? So like role of mayor, we are very clear on what it isn't. We know that a large part of what it is ability to persuade. Anything else?
Well, it also does matter the relationship that the mayor has with the city manager. And I think Sly James and Troy Schulte, who's the current city manager and has been for a decade, have had a good working relationship. When Mark Funkhauser was mayor, he did not like the current city manager at the time, Wayne Cawthon. They fought a lot. That dysfunction definitely affected the performance of city government. So the city manager role will be important even as we elect a new mayor.
So, and then you've also illuminated that when people get mad about things like potholes or where snow is being plowed, where snow is not being plowed, that they should be cursing the city manager?
They probably should be, but that's not usually what happens. When Kay Barnes was mayor, she and Bob Collins got along well. That was her, the city manager, when she was first elected. Then we had a terrible winter. The snow removal impact was lousy. Kay Barnes
sounds familiar.
Yeah, Kay Barnes got blamed for it. And pretty soon after that, Bob Collins resigned. I think he resigned kind of knowing that his job was in a precarious state. And then she brought in a new city manager from Denver who was very much economic development oriented. So the city manager is responsible for trash pickup and pothole filling and snow removal, but probably the mayor gets the calls with the complaints.
So maybe part of being a good mayor is gracefully handling things that aren't your fault being blamed on you.
Well, very, very good point. And also just getting along with the city manager, both the mayor and the city manager together craft the budget, which, of course, is the policy document for the city. Where you spend your money is really what you think is important. And they have to work together on that. And that's truly, if they have a good working relationship, then the budget goes a lot better.
But should we be leery about, I mean, there are people running for mayor who are making references to potholes as part of their platform. Should we be leery of that?
Well, obviously, the mayor has to be concerned with citizen satisfaction, has to be concerned with basic services. And this is often the way things go. Mayors get elected saying they're going to pay attention to basic services. Then they find out that's really hard, and they turn their attention to signature projects like a downtown hotel or an airport or a big arena. It's just easier to put your focus on a project than it is on solving crime or fixing all the water mains. I mean, that's expensive and long-term, but really, that's what voters care about.
Well, but so back to this project idea. Lisa, the airport looms large over this current mayoral term that's coming to a close. And because that is still unresolved in so many ways, the next mayor is really on the hook, right?
Absolutely. I think up to this point, a lot of the hardest and ugliest work is behind the council and the mayor now that we have development agreements signed. And so now it really is going to be up to the mayor to make sure that this the image of the whole project stays positive and that there's momentum moving forward. So now really the power is with
you say stays positive.
Well,
I mean, there is actually probably some PR repair to do citywide.
Absolutely. It's been, you know, I mentioned before, it has been kind of an ugly process to get to this point. And largely because for an infrastructure project of this magnitude, the public doesn't usually get to see every twist and turn, and it's not pretty a lot of the time. And so I think the next mayor is going to have to continue that transparency with the public. There's been some accusations that things were happening behind closed doors and in the dark, and I think it'll be up to the next mayor to really reverse that image of this project and keep the public informed of where it is, and really make a very public showing of each milestone, and convince everyone that there's progress being made, even though it's going to take a few years, because a $1 billion project doesn't happen overnight.
So there's going to be a lot to navigate. And it's going to take some fancy footwork.
It will take some fancy footwork. But really, the people making the biggest decisions now on the airport project are the developers and the airlines. And so the mayor, I think, will largely have more of a public relations job to do.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Mayors 101 on KCUR's Central Standard. So far, we've been hearing from reporters Lisa Rodriguez and Lynn Horsley. Up next, former city councilman John Sharp weighs in on the whole relationship between Kansas City's mayor and the city council. What should we be looking for in a mayor from his perspective? That's next. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And with an 11-candidate mayoral race in full effect in Kansas City, Missouri, and the leading candidate currently polling at something crazy like 14%, we are hoping to lay some groundwork for informed decision-making. Our sister show, Up to Date, has been interviewing the candidates, and KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez, in the studio with us now, is going to be hosting a public forum with the candidates tonight. That's at 6 o'clock at the World War I Museum. But right now, we are trying to be sure that everyone knows what Kansas City's mayor actually does once in office, because it's hard to hire the right person for a job when you don't quite know what the qualifications are. Call 816-235-2888 with your questions. Now, my next guest is John Sharp. He was on city council representing the 6th District from 1983 to 1991, and then again from 2007 to 2015. He's now a columnist for the Martin City Telegraph. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Okay, so for listeners who don't know, where is the 6th District? What part of town are we talking about?
Well, it used to be South Kansas City before the districts were gerrymandered. Now it looks like a big capital L, and it starts at 59th and State Line and runs down the corridor and then basically runs east along the 435-470 corridor, although there's a little point where the 5th District comes clear down to Redbridge. It looks like a spear point.
So it sounds like you're happy with this change.
Yeah, right.
okay, so... in the years I just referenced, 1983 to 1991 and 2007 to 2015, that means you worked with which mayors?
Well, I came on the council when Dick Berkeley was the mayor. And then in my second go-around, Mark Funkhauser and then Sly James.
So can you talk a little bit about how different people navigate the role of mayor differently in their relationships with city council?
Well, I think everybody does it a little bit differently. Dick Berkeley was more low-key, took copious notes, but he wasn't really out front on a lot of things. And
can you give an example of that? What did that look like in, it's like, take me to a particular decision or debate?
Well, it wasn't any one thing in particular, but you just didn't see from his office the pressing to do this or do that. It was more collaborative style. And
it sounds like a studious approach?
Studious, although sometimes you have to make decisions. And I think he could have been a little more aggressive on making decisions, because there comes a time when you have to choose. Mark Funkhauser really never got along well with the council, and didn't have a staff that was able to make those relationships work. And
can I just jump in and ask you, when
sure.
you say he never got along with city council, is that because there was an essential skill that a mayor in Kansas City needs to have that he did not have?
Well, I just don't think that was his temperament.
So temperament is important if you're going to be mayor of Kansas City.
Well, it doesn't hurt, but he got crossways with some members of the council. I got along with him okay, but because I wasn't really there to worry about personality so much, but I don't think he was very effective.
And then, so then Sly James is the third mayor you've worked with?
Yes, and I wasn't obedient enough for Sly, so we had an interesting relationship. But Sly is very forceful and can be very charming, but he can also go to bully mode pretty quickly if he doesn't get his way.
What does that look like?
Well, it looks like it makes it tough for him to play well with others sometimes. And I think we're seeing that on the pre-K sales tax, where you have every public school district that's wholly or partly in the city not in support of it when they're getting quite a bit of money from it. So I think sometimes you have to have a more collaborative approach to be effective.
Lisa and Lynn, I'd love for both of you to jump in and share, is there another side to that? That, like, if you're in the city council and you're sort of wrestling with the mayor over getting that, like, final vote, that the reason a mayor might be really pushing an agenda after being elected by the entire city, that there might be a reason for that.
Well, what I was going to say, this is Lynn Horsley, Sly James has made education one of his key priorities. He really wants to bolster education and especially early childhood education. The mayor doesn't run education in this city. That's one of the other interesting things. In some cities, the mayor is in charge of the school district, but that's not the case. I think he feels like his only option is to push hard for things he would really like to work for, and he thinks pre-K is very important. But obviously, John is right that if the school districts aren't backing it, that makes that a very hard sell. I was also just going to say that one way the mayor does get his agenda through the city is that he appoints both the committees of the council and he appoints a lot of boards and commissions.
What do the committees of the council do?
Well, they review the finances and the development proposals and the public works projects and the airport. And if he wants to direct an agenda in a particular way, then he's going to put council members on those committees that he thinks will exercise his priorities. He can also remove people. Phil Glynn is currently running for mayor, and Phil was on the TIF commission, but Phil had some real problems with the way that wealthy developers were getting tax increment financing proposals through. And he and the mayor clashed.
In common everyday conversation, that's like the tax breaks.
Exactly. Phil thought there were too many tax breaks, and the mayor had projects that he wanted to get tax breaks. Well, the mayor removed Phil Glynn from the TIF commission. So the mayor does have that power that he can appoint and he can demote both council members and citizens to these various boards.
Is that part of what being quote-unquote forceful looks like?
That's what forceful looks like. And even Kay Barnes, who was really pretty diplomatic and had a light touch, she got very irritated with a city councilwoman one time and removed her from an influential committee. That is the way they can kind of wag their finger and also send a signal to other council members, if you cross me, you're off my board.
Lisa Rodriguez, what's your sense of what the other side of that might be? That from a city council person's perspective, a quote-unquote forceful mayor can be a source of frustration. Is there another side to that?
I don't know. I mean, I think for some people on the current council, particularly, it can be a source of frustration. But really, I haven't seen, at least on the standing city council committees, much shuffling of leadership there, more than just back and forth and just some testy exchanges between the mayor and city council. And I think that has probably escalated in the last year as well, not only because Sly James is reaching the end of his term, but also because he has half the city council running for mayor. And so, you know, he's made some comments about, you know, certain arguments or decisions being politically motivated. And it's made for some tension on the city council. And the last 4 years, this current city council hasn't been quite as cooperative as the council was for his first 4 years. So there are some testy exchanges. And Sly has always is always very colorful. And that's part of his appeal to the public as well. But But it's made for some tense moments there. But mostly, I think just that, frustrations and exchanges, but not a real threat of removing a council member from a committee or from leading a committee.
So, John Sharp, can you take us into some, like, the weeds a little bit in terms of how a mayor works with city council, like what that relationship looks like in the day-to-day?
Well, the mayor can be very involved in the passage of ordinances and in shaping the city budget. And, of course, the budget is the most important thing that a council does, is approving the city budget, because that really sets your policy. It's one thing to talk about, oh, we want to improve basic services, or, oh, yes, we're very concerned about crime, and then not adequately fund either of those. So the mayor should be very involved in those things, and some mayors are more involved than others.
You know, so I guess thinking about, as I think about this in terms of job qualifications to be mayor, you want to look for someone whose priorities reflect your own priorities, because that's going to end up appearing in the form of a budget. But you also want someone maybe who has some experience with a budget.
Well, I think you want someone who not only has experience in budgetary matters, but you want someone who has experience in city government. Because it's awfully easy to say, oh, yes, I've been real experienced in the business world, and I can just transfer all of that automatically to government. It just doesn't work that way. So to be a mayor of a big city, I really would be a little leery of supporting someone who doesn't have some governmental experience. But I think the voters really do need to look at what these candidates' priorities are. And I think they need to look at whether they have had some results. In other words, several of these folks have been on the council. Well, what have you accomplished? And some have got things that they can talk about. I'm a little more familiar with South Kansas City because, of course, that's where I've lived for 50-something years. And one of the candidates, Scott Taylor, talks a lot about the revitalization of Ward Parkway Shopping Center, because I remember when it was pretty much vacant. Redbridge Shopping Center was pretty much vacant, and so you've seen some revitalization there. So I want to see results.
How, Lisa, Lynn, how do you measure results when you look at the term of a city council person?
Well, that's a great question, and I think what John is saying is if they say they want neighborhood revitalization, what projects have they actually revitalized? And if you've brought Redbridge Shopping Center and Ward Parkway Shopping Center back from the, you know, seemingly dead malls, that's impressive. The mayor, current mayor, Sly James, I think did want the single terminal at the airport. But the citizens were not really very excited about that idea, and neither were the airlines. And that took an enormous public outreach effort and rallying of all of the business community. It probably took longer than it should have, and maybe if it had been handled more smoothly from the beginning, we would already have that airport built. But having said that, the mayor in this town needs to be able to rally people and have a coherent plan of action, because projects take a long time and the citizenry is pretty divided on a lot of things. And the bigger the project, the bigger the fights.
So just getting people on board with a project. Well, that's good job experience.
And having a good plan of attack. I think John is absolutely right. Having some government experience is really helpful. I will say Sly James had not served in city government
before. That's
what
before. I was going to say.
And that's unusual. Most of our mayors have been on the city council before, and I think city council experience is really helpful.
Lisa, jump in.
I think when you talk about measuring results, that can be difficult, because I think that most the greatest results that we'll probably see from the last 8 years will be, once Sly James is several years removed from office. I think probably the, although the incoming mayor will oversee a lot of this airport project, I think it will for many be viewed as part of Sly James's legacy, getting this passed. Just like downtown revitalization is widely seen as Kay Barnes' legacy, and that's probably something that wasn't as obvious while she was in office.
That's a great point. I will also say that you sometimes think you're on your way toward solving a problem, and then it falls apart. In Sly's first term, it did look like we were getting a handle on violent crime. There was one year when homicides dropped dramatically, and the prosecutor's office and the FBI and everybody was working together, and they thought, we've got our arms around this. And the next year, the homicides spiked again, and we've had a terrible string of years with just appalling murders. And I don't know that anybody right now has a great plan of attack.
So given the moment when an election happens, you might not be able to see the forest for the trees, or however that saying goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I also do want to bring up this idea of a legacy, because how a mayor's term actually shakes out, they take on these big projects in hopes of leaving their mark on Kansas City. I've noticed that Quentin Lucas has campaigned somewhat on not wanting anything named after him if he's elected, and that I'm curious about why that would be a compelling campaign promise.
I guess that is probably kind of a signal that you know, that he's trying to put out there, that I'm here to you know, put my nose to the ground and really get this work done. I'm not interested in this for the glory, and maybe to play down some, you know, some narrative that you know, certain candidates are just running for higher office and have bigger, greater ambitions. You know, I think that's probably part of Quentin Lucas's argument there, that he wants that to be known, that he's here working for the people and not for the glory.
But is there something to be said for how the desire to leave a legacy maybe gets things done that otherwise wouldn't happen here in Kansas City? I mean, what else is going to motivate a big project that no one has to take on? We have to get the trash removed. We don't have to build a Bartle Hall. You know what I'm saying?
Well, quite frankly, I'd rather see a mayor who wants to make a legacy, not of a monument somewhere, but of improved services and particularly improved public safety. And I'm glad Lynn brought that up, because in 2017, we ranked fifth in the nation among big cities in our homicide rate per 100,000 people. That's crazy. We shouldn't be anywhere near that. It's disgraceful. And a lot of people, I think, believe that, well, we're in a big city, that just comes with it. It doesn't. And also in 17, among all cities of 25,000 or more, we were in the top 30. We were 27th. And one of the things that, besides dealing with the underlying issues of crime, our police department is stretched awfully thin. They spend an average of over 80% of their on-duty time just going from call to call to call. And you can't do any community policing when you're doing that. And we really haven't incentivized people to come forward and be witnesses when they've witnessed homicides, because you are putting yourself in danger. We don't have a witness protection program like the feds do.
And so, it's your sense that the mayor can do something about this?
Absolutely. The mayor is a member of the police board and certainly has a role there. But one thing that I'd like to see us continue to push is getting the reward up to a higher level for homicides. When, just a few years ago, it was just $2,000. And a lot of people aren't going to risk retaliation for $2,000. I talked to the chief, and we got it up to $5,000. And then since then, the city has put in some additional money, and it's $10,000. But in Omaha, for instance, it's $25,000. In Houston, it's $20,000. Omaha has...
Can someone here clarify the role of the mayor in all of this?
Well, the mayor is on the police board. John's absolutely right about that. He does have a relationship with the police chief, but he's one of only five police board members. And so, again, he can't tell the police chief what to do. And in fact, there's often a lot of friction between the police chief and the city manager. Kansas City does give the police department a lot of money. And I think, but without a lot of strings attached. I mean, the city manager cannot direct how that money is spent. So there's some friction over the funding. And the mayor can again try to have a coherent agenda, but he can't just tell the police chief what to do.
We're going to have to come right back to this. There's still time to call 816-235-2888 with your questions about the job description for Kansas City mayor. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. We're calling today's edition Mayor's 101 because the whole point is to give people a clearer picture of what the mayor of Kansas City does, what power that office holds, and what kinds of decision-making actually reside at least partially elsewhere, and in some cases entirely elsewhere. My guests are KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez, former Star reporter Lynn Horsley, and two-time city councilman John Sharp, who's now an advocate for South Kansas City and a columnist for the Martin City Telegraph. Hi again, everyone.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, dear.
So there are a few different candidate guides out there to help people sort through this 11-candidate ballot. The one from The Pitch interests me because it includes information on the support base for each of the candidates. Is that something that, in your experience, matters once the mayor is in office, where the bulk of the support kind of came from, either demographically or in terms of, like, the business community? You know what I'm saying?
I think John probably has some insights on that, you know, because John, you had your own constituents that backed you. Did you answer just to them, though, or did you have a broader perspective?
Well, I think once you get in office, you have to take a broader perspective. But I do think it gives voters insight to see who is supporting what candidates, because these groups generally do their homework and have a little more time to really delve into a candidate's qualifications and where they stand on the issues. So you have a lot of influential political groups that do this. Freedom Incorporated, of course, is one of the major ones. We have a group in South Kansas City called Southland Progress, and we did that. We screened the candidates and have made recommendations because I was talking to one of the candidates for mayor, and I'm not going to single anybody out, but I was talking about some of the progress we've made out in Martin City. And, of course, Martin City is part of Kansas City. It has been since the 1960s.
Very confusing how it has the word city in its
right name,
but so is the fact that we're Kansas City in Missouri. We're just going to let that slide.
Well, this person said, well, thanks for telling me about Martin City, but I'm a little more interested in Kansas City. Well, I said, Martin City is part of Kansas City. So we kind of want people that at least are a little familiar with
but
our
that's
area.
That's a great story because this is a very divided city. We're divided by a river. We're divided by neighborhoods, we're divided by east and west. And so, yes, it is important to know who's endorsing these various mayoral candidates. But I will say many of them, generally, the development lawyers, the development firm, the law firms, the chamber, the business community, they frequently back a number of the candidates, at least in the primary. And then it really gets tough going into the general election before June.
So starting with in general, what are the questions you would ask Lynn about anyone running for mayor anytime we're talking about in Kansas City? Just a couple of top questions that you think people should answer for themselves.
Well, I would want to know about their temperament. Can they get along? Can they rally support? You know, do they have a sunny personality? And can they be a good ambassador for Kansas City? Are they experienced? Do they know about city government? We have people running for this mayor who I've never seen at City Hall. That would concern me. You know, what are their priorities, and are they able to juggle a ton of priorities? This is a huge city with a lot of problems. You cannot just be focused on one project.
So then, Lisa, going to right now, what are some of the questions you would ask right now in particular?
Well, I think an issue that has become a huge one in this race is that of affordable housing, which is pretty new in Kansas City because for a long time we've considered ourselves a super affordable city. And so there are, going down the list, nearly all the candidates will list affordable housing as one of their priorities. And they have, you know, different plans of attack for how to tackle that. But again, if, you know, a mayor is one person, will be able to set a policy agenda. But to me, the biggest question is where does the money come from to tackle that issue? And we may not get those details until after the primary. I think with so many candidates, it's hard to dig into policy details on that kind of thing. But that's what I'm most interested in right now.
How do you evaluate track record on a newish, not necessarily a newish issue, but it's new that it's such a big part of the public discourse?
I think it's difficult to evaluate because a lot of the candidates, you know, don't necessarily have a set track record in this. But to look at policy proposals and see how some of those have played out in other parts of the country, because affordable housing is not just a Kansas City issue. It's across the whole country, and different cities have taken different approaches.
Well, I'd like to see their specific ideas on how to reduce crime, particularly violent crime, and not just platitudes, but specific policy proposals.
So a slogan doesn't do it for you?
Not quite.
So,
I'd like to see specific proposals on how we can continue to attract jobs and new businesses to the city, because as an aging city, the only way we can bring in enough tax revenue to fix our crumbling infrastructure is through economic growth. But how do we do that without giving away the farm, keeping in mind that really there should be a regional solution to these tax breaks, because we have to compete with Kansas. And of course, under the former governor, at least, if we all decided to open up a nail salon and bait shop over there, we could probably have gotten quite a bit in incentives.
So this is a good time to bring in Jerry, who has called us from Lee's Summit with a question about how the city government of Kansas City, Missouri interacts with a more regional kind of situation. Jerry.
Hey. Yeah, since a lot of, you know, like the Jackson County Jail and Jackson County Courthouse are downtown, does the mayor have, I mean, how does he interact with the other counties like Clay and Jackson, or does he have any say at all in any of their decisions?
Okay, we're going to get some answers to this question, and I just want to remind people that we're saying he, and I believe that is because the current mayor is a he, not because mayors are de facto he.
Very good. He or she will have to work collaboratively and hopefully across state line and county lines. But that's a great question, Jerry. No, the mayor cannot control the dysfunction in the Jackson County Legislature, and he has no say in how they build a new county jail. But I covered Johnson County recently, and clearly, the Johnson County communities rely on the health of a central city. And clearly, the central city relies on healthy suburbs. I think there should be more collaborative work regionally, and that's something that probably doesn't happen enough.
Lynn is absolutely right about that, because we just don't talk that much across the state lines or even with other jurisdictions. But talking about cooperation with the county, you know, the county has basically booted the city out as far as housing city prisoners in their facility with not a whole lot of notice. So the city is going to have to scramble to do something to provide space for city prisoners.
And I think really quickly, when we talk about collaboration, it's not just across state lines or with the suburbs. If you look just north of the river, Kansas City weaves through all of these municipalities of Riverside, Gladstone, Clay Como. And that is and I think the Northland has really felt separated from the rest of the city, partially for that reason. And I think that voting bloc is particularly hungry for more collaboration between Kansas City, which is really the engine that drives the region.
And Jerry also, well, in fact, it was our guest here, John Sharp, who mentioned that we have an aging city and that attracting new talent is important. That brings us to tonight's event, which is representing millennials and what they're interested in. Is this something that you expect to come up tonight, Lisa?
I think so. I think a lot of the people, at least from questions they've already submitted, are hungry to hear what the arguments are for young people to move and stay and work in Kansas City.
Well, KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez, great talking to you as always. And tonight's candidate forum is at the World War I Museum at 6, and you'll be hosting it. So exciting.
Yep, so exciting.
Thank you so much. Lynn Horsley, thank you.
Great to be here.
And former Councilman John Sharp, thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, that is a wrap for today, but you can catch this whole discussion if you missed parts of it by going back to kcur.org/centralstandard. Later in the day, tomorrow we will be hosting a follow-up to Mayor's 101, only this time it'll be School Board's 101. Plus, is pop music the true literature of America? A local professor thinks it is. Tune in for those discussions tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Melody Rowell with Coy Duggar, Chris Young, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next.